Fourth case for argument this morning is Coleman against Dunlap.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Thomas Kargi. In this case, I represent Defendant Earl Dunlap. Your Honors, the sole issue before the Court in this case is whether or not... I'm sorry, Your Honor, may I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal?
You have to manage your own time, Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the sole issue in this case is whether or not the District Court was correct in finding that Defendant Earl Dunlap was not entitled to judicial immunity in connection with a decision that he made as the transitional administrator of the Juvenile Temporary Detention Center. In Ashbrook v. Hoffman, this Court recognized that non-judicial officials are entitled to quasi-judicial immunity so long that when the acts that they perform are integral to the judicial process. Defendant Dunlap is being sued in this case because he was appointed by the District Court in 2007 to serve as the transitional administrator of the Juvenile Temporary Detention Center.
Isn't that a key word? He is, in fact, an administrator of the center, and as a person engaged in administrative functions, it looks like he fits much more comfortably outside the realm of the absolute judicial immunity, particularly given the Supreme Court's caution against expanding that very strong doctrine.
You know, he's formally titled the transitional administrator. What he's doing is the exact same thing that a receiver does. If the court had called him a receiver instead of a transitional administrator, the issue that you raise wouldn't be a problem because receivers have been universally recognized as being entitled to judicial immunity.
Well,
and the plaintiff in this case... I'm sorry?
I'm not sure about that.
I don't see how receivers are universally recognized as entitled to judicial immunity.
Your Honor, they are, so long as they're acting...
They are treated as sharing the court's immunity to the extent they are carrying out the court's orders, but if they do something other than carry out the court's orders, they don't get immunity.
Yes, Your Honor.
A receiver who goes out and steals from the estate doesn't get official immunity of any kind.
Your Honor, I misspoke. It's only when the receiver is acting within the scope of their authority.
Not simply acting within the scope of their authority. If you steal from the estate, you're acting within the scope of your authority, but you're acting wrongfully. The question, I should think, is whether the receiver or the transitional administrator or somebody else is carrying out the court's orders, or equivalently, making the sort of decision that, had there not been a receiver or a special master or a transitional administrator or something like that, would have been made by the judge.
And that's what precisely happened in this case, Your Honor.
But that's the question as I conceive it. Is this a sort of decision that would have been made by the judge? If I understand the underlying litigation, it has to do with conditions of confinement of juveniles.
Yes, Your
Honor. Right? That's the kind of decision that's made by a judge. I mean, who's employed doesn't look like. It's not even an issue related to the underlying litigation.
But, Your Honor, as a part of the district court's remedial order in this case, they directed Mr. Dunlap to correct the hiring mistakes that were allegedly made when the facility was under the control of Cook County. In this case, it's important to remember that Mr. Dunlap is simply alleged to have ratified the decision of other employees.
That's a different issue altogether.
Yeah. Doesn't have anything to do with immunity.
Right.
It just says, I'm not responsible. Immunity depends on the proposition I'm carrying out the court's task. I'm the court's delegate. Now, in what way is Dunlap acting as the court's delegate rather than as a manager?
Well, assume for the sake of argument that Mr. Dunlap wasn't appointed as receiver, and instead the managers of the Juvenile Temporary Detention Center came to the district court with the hiring plan that included the decision not to hire Mr. Coleman. Presumably the judge would review that plan and decide whether or not it was appropriate given the remedial orders he had prepared. In this case, Mr. Dunlap served that purpose. He was presented with a plan to hire certain people in 2008, Your Honor. The list didn't include Mr. Coleman. But that list would have been presented to the district court had Mr. Dunlop not been the administrator.
I want to go back to the point that Judge Easterbrook just made, though. I mean, there's an underlying issue here, which certainly engages the court's jurisdiction about the conditions in the juvenile center. Whether person A, person B, or person C carries out the steps that are necessary to correct those conditions strikes me as a secondary level question. And I might add that, you know, even people like Chief Judge Easterbrook, who are entitled to judicial immunity for his judicial acts, you know, is also the chief judge of the circuit, and chief judges of circuits, I'm told on good authority by the other people on this panel, get insurance because there are some things that you do that are not judicial acts. So it strikes me Mr. Dunlop couldn't be better off than the chief judge of the circuit.
But, Your Honor, and that's...
And hiring people is one of those things, you know. If he refused to hire any women to work in the clerk's office or something, that would be a problem.
But that would be a problem because Chief Judge Easterbrook is making that decision outside the context of a particular case. And this is something that the Ninth Circuit spoke to in the New Alaska Development Court
case. Yeah, but he's running
case.
The court system.
But that's the question that I was trying to pose. Since the underlying case has to do with the conditions of confinement of juveniles and not with hiring, it looks like hiring and firing decisions are managerial. If in, you know, it used to be 30 years ago that district judges would just take over prisons. They would say, we think that, you know, I think the conditions of confinement here are barbaric. So I'm now appointing a special manager, and he's just going to run the prison. He's going to do what the warden did. And in the course of running the prison, you hire and fire guards. But it never seemed to me that that would make the special master immune for, say, violating Title VII if he hired only white guards.
But, Your Honor, in this case, one of the problems that the district court found was that the county was hiring unqualified people to run the facility.
Yes, but there was no underlying claim in the litigation that the problem was that they were hiring Republicans and we had to get that stopped.
No, Your Honor.
Or we're hiring Democrats, and we had to get that stopped. If the judge had said something like, you're hiring unqualified people, your dear transitional administrator, please hire only people who have high school degrees, then I could easily understand a claim that the high school degree produced a disparate impact on some protected class. And the transition administrator would say, I was carrying out some part of the judge's decision. If he didn't like the decision, complain to the Court of Appeals. But that doesn't look even remotely like what Dunlap is doing here. It's not related to your argument at all. Indeed, your argument, your underlying argument on the merits, is that Dunlap had nothing to do with this. And necessarily, Dunlap is saying, I therefore was not carrying out some special duty imposed on the court. Dunlap's underlying claim is, I was completely indifferent to this.
But the plaintiff's claim, Your Honor...
So much for immunity, one would think.
Your Honor, the plaintiff's claim in this case is that Mr. Dunlap is an institutional defendant. If Mr. Dunlap wasn't the one who was in the transitional administrative capacity, it would have been the district court that was the institutional defendant, because ultimately...
No. The district court wouldn't have been a defendant. You be serious. But the whole underlying theme here is, your defense on the merits is that this is not a call that Dunlap made. And therefore, necessarily, you're saying this was not something where Dunlap was acting as the district judge's ambassador to make sure things got done correctly. Right? Your underlying defense is unrelated to the litigation.
But it's not, because part of the hiring plan was one of his responsibilities under the district court's remedial orders, Your Honor. He was directed by the district court to hire people that were qualified for the position. Your Honor, it's important to remember that the Ashbrook case, the petition commissioners in that case were not performing traditional judicial functions. They were charged with selling a piece of property, and they were sued for the manner in which they sold it, not just merely the selling of the property. That's sort of the same thing that's alleged against Mr. Dunlop here. He's not being sued for executing the order. He's being sued for the manner in which he executed it. So if you decide that Mr. Dunlop is no longer entitled to immunity, I have to question whether or not the petition commissioners in the Ashbrook case would still be entitled to immunity as well. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
May it please the Court, John Moran on behalf of the plaintiff appellee. Your Honors, this is a case in which Earl Dunlap sued in his official capacity as the
transgender. What's going on in the rest of this litigation at the moment?
Judge, I tried to. There are several motions still pending in front of the district court, and the district court had allowed leave to file a third amended complaint. There's a motion under Rule 59 to reconsider on a factual basis.
Nothing much seems to be happening, in other words.
The judge granted
a
stay.
Let me ask you the question, why you sued Dunlap? What's the point?
Because Mr. Dunlap was placed as the person in charge of the transition.
So what? Well, right? If Phil Jones in some office of the city of Chicago makes a patronage hire, do you sue the mayor? No, you sue Phil Jones. You sue the person who violated the Constitution by making the patronage decision. You don't sue the guy as high up as you can go. And in fact, it's a pretty fundamental rule of this kind of litigation that people are responsible for their own decisions. There isn't any form of supervisory liability where you sue the highest guy in the chain. So I repeat my question. Why did you sue Dunlap? You must think he did something, because otherwise this lawsuit, a claim against Dunlap, violates Rule 11.
Well, Judge, there's several answers to that, one of which became relevant. We came up here solely on the question of whether or not Mr. Dunlap had derivative judicial immunity. I understand that, Judge.
Appeal is. That's not the question I asked.
But in the course of advising and researching that issue, the defendant filed a reply brief, and in that reply brief he cited a case called Barton, which comes from 1883. I took Barton to the present, and I discovered two things. One is that there's a federal statute.
Is this before you file a suit at all?
No, this is just...
I would really appreciate it if you would answer my question. My question is, why did you sue Dunlap, and how does the claim against Dunlap comport with Rule 11? And decisions from 1883 that you discovered after this case is in the Court of Appeals do not speak to that question.
No, I'm not saying that. The fact of the matter is that Mr. Dunlap was sued in his capacity because we believe that he was the person put in charge of that center and he bore administrative responsibility.
In other words, you are conceding that the suit against Dunlap is frivolous. The Supreme Court has said, I think more often than anybody can count, that there is no vicarious or supervisory liability for violations of the Constitution. There is only personal liability.
I'm not conceding that at all.
That you have no evidence of Dunlap's personal involvement in this decision. The easiest way in which this appeal will be resolved is for you to dismiss your complaint against him before he files the Rule 11 motion.
There's a case called Medical Development International versus California Department of Corrections at 585 Fed 3rd 1211, in which the Medical Development International sued California Department of Corrections and the receiver in that particular action, and the receiver claimed absolute judicial immunity. That claim was rejected by the Ninth Circuit. And this case, the question of standing, Mr. Dunlap was sued in several aspects, as I recall, Your Honor. So I don't believe that Mr. Dunlap escapes liability. Official receivers have been sued.
Have you read Ashcroft against Dick Ball? Evidently not.
Well, at some time ago, Mr. Dunlap is a viable defendant in this case in his official capacity, if the district court...
Do you have a Monell-type claim against him? Are you claiming that he has policies in place that are...
We never got to that point because of this motion. That's
I mean, because that, at least in an official capacity, is the sort of thing that, you know, he sort of stands for the administration, if you will.
Well, what happened, Your Honor, is below is that the defendant Dunlap pressed the immunity claim immediately, and we never really got to that issue. The Judge Holderman allowed us to file a third amended complaint to address some of the issues that Judge Easterbrook is referring to, but whether they were properly addressed or not hasn't really been wasn't raised by the defendant below, and it so we really don't have a record at this point. I mean, I agree with you what you said, Judge Easterbrook. We have a very narrow record here, much narrower than I'm used to, because the matter was stayed on the motion of the defendant, so the Judge Holderman wasn't in a position to get to the rest of the issues. And I think also the fact that the defendant indicated that he sought to stay pursuant to another case that's fully briefed before Your Honors involving a similar issue and a similar claim of judicial immunity for other workers at the temporary detention center. So that's the problem that that I have. But, you know, we do have this we have this statute, at least as a receiver issue.
But you say this has always been in his official capacity.
In count one.
Okay.
Yeah. It was, I think it was, I don't have a copy of the complaint with me. I wasn't, but I think that
I mean, because immunity doctrine normally applies to personal capacity, suits.
Well,
so I don't
it,
know why we're worrying about immunity if it's official capacity.
Well, I think
if
he...
If it's an official capacity suit, it's a suit against the office, and then not immunity, but Monell is the main problem here.
Frankly, I can't say, but I think the original complaint was against him in official and personal capacity. And I don't think the distinction that you're drawing, Your Honor, was raised.
You have no reason whatsoever to believe that he did anything in his personal capacity, which seems to me to amount to a confession of violating Rule 11.
Well, I'm not making that concession. You're asking me to make it.
Neither are you articulating any reason to believe that he did anything in his personal capacity.
Well, the record does not exist at this point.
Suing somebody with no basis and then saying, let's find it in discovery, just amounts to wishing Rule 11 weren't there.
Well, in this particular case, I disagree with Your Honor respectfully. I think that the historical analysis and the functional analysis here is noted by Justice Wood is simple. The powers and authorities and responsibilities given to Mr. Dunlap clearly make him an administrator rather than a person cloaked with judicial immunity. He's running a business.
Are you at least alleging that he had anything to do with Mr. Coleman's termination on a personal, like he read the file and said, yeah, this guy's got to go, or...
I think we allege that he ratified the decision, but I'd have to look at the Third Amendment complaint.
But in a personal, active way, I mean, well, I guess we'll just have to look at the complaint. But okay.
Is there any other questions, Judge? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Anything further, Mr. Cardi?
Your Honor, very quickly, in the Third Amendment complaint, Mr. Dunlap is being sued in his individual capacity. I don't believe that there's an official capacity claim, but I know for certain that there's a personal capacity claim. Your Honors, if you hold that Mr. Dunlap isn't entitled to immunity, you're basically holding that receivers aren't entitled to immunity. Receivers' jobs are to operate the entities that are placed into receivership. Traditionally, those receivers, as long as they're acting within the scope of their authority, have been entitled to immunity. Your Honor, just briefly, with regard to the Ninth Circuit case that was referenced, in fact, the defendant in the case was the receiver because the receiver disavowed a contract. So that has nothing at all to do with this case.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is taken under advisement.